I have written articles about the various aspects of M&A and have written two that are based on true story case studies in order to teach the numerous lessons I've learned throughout 15 acquisitions I've been involved in, mostly as the buyer. But these days, when I'm approached by an entrepreneur for advice related to M&A, it is almost always because they were just approached by an interested acquirer and are trying to figure out how to react, what to do next, and what to prepare for should things proceed down the acquisition path. This article intends to serve as a start here guide for such a situation. The sections that follow are in a sequential order that should generally guide your thought process and related actions after first being approached for acquisition. You should understand that most of the insights apply to companies that are not in distress and don't actually need to sell. Section title: You're Still a Long Way from Being Acquired. Companies that are active and experienced acquirers explore 10 or more possible acquisitions for everyone they actually follow through with a formal letter of intent, LOI, to acquire. So if you meet with someone from Google or IBM and they mention the phrase possible acquisition during the meeting, don't go out and buy that Ferrari you've been dreaming about. In fact, don't even pull out your latest cap table to remind yourself how much equity you have so that you can calculate your net proceeds from a $20 million, $100 million, or $500 million price tag. Instead, try to figure out if the potential acquirer is really serious or just sniffing around. How do you know if the acquirer is serious? Later, after reading the section titled Don't Turn Into a Seller, you'll get a good idea of how to get a dialogue going to determine seriousness. But if they don't specifically come right out and say they are looking to make an acquisition in your market space, here are additional signals to look for from the potential acquirer. 1. Executives are involved in the discussion. 2. Representatives from both the corporate development function and a product division or significant business unit are engaged. This mostly applies to large corporations. 3. They have a history of making acquisitions. The more the better. 4. You've recently been beating them in the marketplace. You fill a significant void in their product line, or you offer some other strategic value that's obvious. Section title: Would you consider selling the company? There's an adage that every company is for sale at the right price. But what does right price mean? I give some insights in another section later, but want to make a different point here. Are there reasons other than a super high price tag to consider selling your company? Of course there are. I'll describe several such reasons, but realize they might just be contributing factors and not the sole driver of your decision. Fading performance. Continuing to perform at very high levels of growth for long periods of time is extremely difficult. Almost all high-growth companies experience periods of reduced growth or worse. When this happens, it is rare that the company ever reaches the previous high rates of growth. Market risks. At each phase of a company's evolution, new risks are presented. Some are market risks like new competitors, completely new approaches to solving the problem, shifting marketing dynamics or trends that somehow force you to react. Execution risks. As you grow, tools, processes, and your management system need to change to accommodate. Also, the skills you need on your team also likely need to change over time. Even your own position as a top executive in the company might need to change. As complexities are added, so are the risks that you will poorly execute in at least some aspects of your business and start performing worse than in the past. Fundraising. If you need more funding to reach the next level, you are basically signing a mental contract with yourself and your investors for a new multi-year tour of duty. And remember that any new investors will want you to keep growing until they can realize a 10x or greater return. How long might that take? Hawaii, tired founders. Running a startup is challenging and mentally exhausting. After several years or longer, the founders can start getting burned out, less passionate, or just ready to move on to their next challenge. If contemplating the above-listed issues leaves you still considering the possibility, you might want to do a quick gut check on the required price tag for the acquirer to pay. This step isn't intended for you to start negotiating valuation with the prospective acquirer. That comes later. Instead, I'm talking about a sanity check to help you decide if you would consider selling the company. Here are some questions to help bookend the issue and determine if there's a possible good deal to get done. Here's an exercise to try. It involves narrowing an infinite range of prices to something more narrow by establishing bookends. At what price would you definitely sell? At what price would you definitely not? Now, narrow that range by replacing the word definitely with strongly consider for the high side and might consider for the low side. Hopefully you see the benefit of the exercise. You might end up with a wide range between the extremes, but I still find this to be a valuable exercise. Additional value comes from having each founder or significant company executive Go through the exercise individually, and then compare the results to facilitate a discussion. When you conduct this exercise, you might find conflicting thoughts inside your head. That's likely due to the three different stakeholders you're thinking about that stand to make money from an acquisition. I recommend you first isolate your thoughts just on yourself. After that, rerun the exercise by thinking about your investors and employees. Side note, please don't take this exercise to suggest that price is the only important term when being acquired. In fact, read my article titled, "Tell Me Your Price and I'll Tell You My Terms," to learn more on that topic. Section title, Don't Turn Into a Seller. If you decide to consider the sale of the company, don't become the seller, but instead let your interested pursuer remain the buyer. It leaves you in a commanding position for the next key steps and throughout the merger agreement negotiation, should it go that far. Of course, that assumes you don't actually need to sell the company. Here is an abbreviated example narrative to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. We weren't considering selling the company until you approached us and expressed interest. In fact, we are hugely focused on continuing to build a great company with a substantial role in this market. We have very high expectations for our company's potential and have strong support from our investors and our board. In order to decide if we would consider selling the company, I would need to know what your key interests are, what synergies you see, and how you feel we can better achieve our vision as part of your company rather than independent. Just be careful not to get so cocky in your response that the acquirer decides you're going to be a royal pain in the ass to deal with during the acquisition process and later as part of their company. Section title, Get Outside Advice. If you determine the acquirer is serious and decide there are reasons to consider a sale of the company, immediately seek outside advice. Before an LOI is presented to you with a 48-hour response window and a no-shop clause, you want to make sure your head is on straight. An experienced outside advisor can be a sounding board for your decisions and a trusted resource during the rest of the acquisition process. If selected carefully, they will not only help you negotiate the best price tag, but also make sure you don't get taken advantage of by an experienced acquirer. A great acquisition includes a combination of high price and fair terms. Where can you find such an advisor? First, look to your other company advisors, consultants, and board members. Investors can also possibly serve in such a role, but just realize they could be conflicted due to their financial interest and potential to focus excessively on things that affect their return on investment. You want someone that will also help look out for the interest of your employees, your co-founders, and your going forward vision once a part of the acquirer's company. Section title, Using a Banker. A big decision you'll need to make is whether to engage a professional M&A banker, broker, or advisor to assist you with the process. They come in all sizes, from solo freelancers to Wall Street firms. Your investors and board directors should be able to make some referrals. Engaging a banker certainly costs money, but they can be worth their weight in gold if they're experienced and if you've built an acquirable company. At one extreme is engaging them starting right after you and your board decide to sell the company. With that, the banker can help expand your strategy, starting with the things that are described in this article. At the other extreme is waiting for legitimate acquisition interest, but ideally before an LOI is presented so they have some time. With that time, they will attempt to bring additional acquirers to the table, ones you don't already have a relationship with, and they'll serve as a front person while soliciting, evaluating, and negotiating acquisition offers. Many startups avoid using a banker because they don't want to give up a portion of the acquisition proceeds, which varies widely based on deal size. But if the banker can help bring just one new acquirer to the table or otherwise help you negotiate a higher exit valuation, that is definitely worth something. And that's not the only value they bring. The challenge often comes with exits smaller than about $20 million. It's hard to find bankers that will do those deals because there isn't much money to be made. How much of the acquisition proceeds typically goes to the banker? Well, it depends on the type of banker you choose to use. Actually, there are different types that are most commonly used based on the expected transaction size. I've just been using the word banker for simplicity. Here's a way to think about it, assuming the banker is engaged before signing an acquisition LOI. Transactions less than $2 million, an M&A advisor will charge in the range of 8 to 10% of the acquisition proceeds. Transactions in the $2 to $20 million range. An M&A advisor or broker will charge on a staggered basis in the range of 8 to 10% for the first $2 million, 4 to 6% for the next $3 million, and 2 to 3% on the remainder above $5 million. Transactions in the $20 to $100 million range. This is when legit M&A firms get involved. They also often charge on a staggered basis, but starting at 3 to 4% and reducing to the 1 to 2% range above about $50 million. Section title, Determining the Right Price. How much is your company worth anyway? If there were a magic formula we could all use, it would make things easy. But there are way too many factors at play to come up with a formula. It is true that multiples of revenue or EBITDA are often used as a starting point, but the point I want to make here is different. You might think that a fair price is one that recognizes and rewards the work you've done in the past and the accomplishments you've achieved along the way. It is true that such a price could be a very exciting number. Unfortunately, it misses a very important thing: the future potential of what you've built, once in the hands of your prospective acquirer. You might get excited about a price tag that is 5x your prior 12 months of revenue. But what if your acquirer could easily generate 12x in just their first year because of their size, scale, and brand reputation, while also using your technology to gain a strategic advantage against their own chief competitor? Now ask yourself if a 5x revenue multiple still seems like a fair price. If you're currently raising a round of funding, or recently closed a round of funding, your acquirer might point to the valuation that was used as an anchor point. Quote, you say you recently raised your Series B at a $25 million valuation, so our $30 million acquisition offer values you more than what investors are valuing you at right now. End quote. Nice try. When you value your company for fundraising purposes, you're planning to use the funding to further grow and eventually exit at a much higher number. When you sell your company, you're mostly closing the door on future valuation growth potential. I say mostly because some acquisition offers include some upside earnings element, usually tied to future performance. The right price for acquisition is one that recognizes what you've built, what the acquirer will be able to do with what you've built, and is sufficient to cause you to close the chapter on seeking your continued growth on your own. Three final comments about trying to determine the right price. Terms matter. Price is just one key factor in such an important transaction. Terms matter greatly, and you can read more about that in my article titled Tell Me Your Price and I'll Tell You My Terms. Future execution risk. Remember the going forward risks mentioned above? Selling your company relieves you and your team of those risks and passes them on to your acquirer. Performance earnouts. It's possible your acquirer can only reach an acceptable exit valuation by tying some of the proceeds to your future performance post-acquisition. This isn't necessarily a showstopper, but definitely comes with nuances to consider. Read more about that in my article titled, Golden Rules for Acquisition Earnouts. Section title, Getting to a No Quickly. Since most acquisition approaches never reach the LOI phase, you want to get to a no as quickly as possible. I'm not talking about your soul searching on whether to even consider the sale of the company, but rather the potential acquirer's decision to make an offer and your reaction to their offer. Price and terms. Just dancing the dance to get to this point takes time and can be distracting. Push your potential acquirer in ways that optimize your efficiency and gets to a no as quickly as possible, if that's the inevitable outcome. Section title, The Importance of the LOI. Everything that leads up to getting a letter of intent, LOI, is non-binding and should be considered exploratory. I used the phrase sniffing around earlier. Even the LOI itself is non-binding, but it clearly demonstrates the acquirer's seriousness and includes high-level specifics about their offer. But it might surprise you when I say that executing an acquisition LOI only increases the odds of getting the deal all the way across the goal line to about 60%, based on my personal, non-scientific research. Side note, there is a rule of thumb I share with founders regarding the odds of getting a deal completely done at various points throughout the process. The process is obviously not this analytical, but I've found it to be a pretty good mental guide. Once the LOI is signed, assume the odds of getting all the way across the goal line are 60% and go up by 5% for each week of due diligence that goes by successfully. If a more detailed and legally worded term sheet ends up getting signed instead of an LOI, then the starting point is 70%. Each slightly concerning item discovered during due diligence causes the odds to go backwards 5%, and each moderately concerning item subtracts 10%. Any significant concerns put you in unknown territory until hopefully back on track. Once the odds get to 90%, they continue to rise in small step functions towards 95%, according to key merger agreement negotiation issues getting resolved and the deal gets signed. Once the deal is signed, there are more very small step function rises to 100% as various closing conditions are completed and the deal is finally closed. When you really want to be careful is before getting an LOI. The potential acquirer needs to get certain information from you in order to confirm they want to pursue an acquisition and to determine the key economic terms, mostly price. But they will continue to ask for more information as long as you're willing to give it to them. What you need to figure out is the minimal amount of information they need in order to confirm their intentions and structure an LOI. For additional important information on this topic, read my related article titled Revealing Company Info Before Getting an Acquisition LOI, section title, Term Sheet or No Term Sheet. Whereas the LOI is fairly high-level and non-binding, a term sheet is worded much more legally and has much more detail to inform the eventual merger agreement that gets executed. It's still somewhat non-binding, but allows the parties to move forward into due diligence in good faith and with fairly good knowledge of what the merger agreement should look like if due diligence doesn't reveal issues. Some startups move straight from LOI into due diligence, thereby skipping the term sheet phase. Negotiating a term sheet takes more time and incurs more legal cost, but there's easily an argument that at least that same amount of time and cost would be incurred to negotiate those same items during due diligence. So a key benefit of a term sheet is knowing more specifically what you're signing up for before you enter due diligence and the required no-shop period described next. It's also likely that your key investors will require a term sheet so they know what they're signing up for. Section title, the no-shop clause. You must realize that the LOI will include what's called a no-shop clause, which essentially prevents you from talking to other prospective acquirers or entertaining other offers after signing the LOI. The duration of this term varies, but is usually 45 to 90 days. Also realize that LOIs are usually only valid for a few days. This is to put pressure on you to make a decision quickly. But what this also means is that if you don't already have other potential acquirers available to approach before your deadline to sign the LOI, you won't be able to create a competitive bidding process. In this case, you'll either need to drag out the verbal discussions and negotiations that precede getting a term sheet or push back on the short deadline for signing the LOI. Hopefully, your advisors can help you navigate this very delicate activity. Section title, Soliciting Other Acquirers. The best way to get a higher acquisition price is competition amongst multiple interested acquirers. But if you are approached with unsolicited acquisition interest, how do you notify other potential acquirers without appearing like a seller? It's not easy, but can be done. And it works much better if you have existing partnerships or business relationships with the companies you want to reach out to. Following is some template language to consider as a starting point. Quote, I am writing because we recently received an unsolicited interest in acquiring our company, and while we weren't even thinking about selling the company at this time, the verbal offer is just interesting enough to cause us to have a discussion with our key stakeholders. I wanted to let you know this in case we do decide it is in the best interest of the company to gauge additional acquisition interest. In that case, I would be happy to notify you and provide additional information. I haven't been through an acquisition process before, but I understand the early part of the process can move really quickly. Unquote. You probably recognize that the template language attempts to give a notification without becoming a seller. It's almost as if you're doing the partner a favor by giving a confidential heads up. There is a definite risk with notifying the other potential acquirers too early in the process. They might conclude that even if you don't sell the company now, you might do so in the near future. It could cause them to be nervous about devoting more resources to a partnership that later comes to a crashing halt due to an acquisition by one of their competitors. For this reason, you might decide to wait until you get enough additional information from the current acquirer to become serious in your consideration. Again, hopefully your advisors can help you navigate this. Section title, Prepare for a Massive Time Suck. Assuming you've agreed on a price and signed an attractive LOI. Congratulations, now prepare for the chaos and massive time suck associated with what's called due diligence. Your acquirer gets to ask for every piece of information you can imagine, and then some. They do this initially to double confirm their acquisition intentions and price tag, while then moving to a phase that supports the negotiation of the merger agreement and preparation for company integration. The process is very chaotic, so pace yourself and prepare for elevated stress that lasts at least several weeks and probably longer. Section title, Maintaining your negotiating leverage. Even though a term sheet might have been negotiated, there are plenty of nuances to get worked out, and sometimes certain items get punted from the term sheet so that due diligence can get started. For those reasons and more, it's important to try and maintain your negotiating leverage. Or if you didn't have much at the time the term sheet was signed, you should try to gain some as due diligence occurs and the 85-page merger agreement is negotiated. Following are a few suggestions to pursue in this regard. Amazing responsiveness to due diligence requests. Blow the acquirer's mind by how well managed your business is, partly as evidenced by how quickly and reliably you're able to fill their data room. If you talk to an advisor, investor, or your M&A attorney, you can discover at least 80% of the things the acquirer is going to ask for, so make sure you're ready for it. A good chunk of the acquirer's requests will overlap with VC due diligence you might have recently gone through, but there will be plenty more that you've never previously been asked for. Clean due diligence. If your acquirer doesn't discover any major concerns, that's great, but is already baked into the price and terms described in the term sheet that you signed. But if you can do better than that by being especially clean, as compared to most other acquisitions they've made, you gain some negotiating ammunition. This is mostly out of your control at this point, since you can't rewind and redo much of anything related to your processes, technology, systems, and contractual agreements. Unexpected positive discoveries. This could relate to your technology, new customer wins, an advancing strategic partnership, or a variety of things your acquirer will be impressed with. If your team has been working on something amazing that your acquirer doesn't know about or doesn't know much about, blow their mind by unveiling it as early as possible during due diligence. In fact, try to manufacture a few such unveilings over the first few weeks of diligence. Not all of it needs to be super huge accomplishments. Instead, cause your acquirer to conclude, "Holy crap, these guys keep accomplishing interesting and amazing new things at a fast pace. Why can't we seem to do the same? Some new dynamic occurs in the market." This is out of your control, but certain announcements by your acquirer's competitors or your competitors could cause your acquirer to get more anxious or desperate to get the deal done. Of course, there could be announcements that cause them major concern, and that could swing the negotiating pendulum in the wrong direction. In a previous life, I led an acquisition of my company to a Fortune 500, and I was fortunate to have all of the above play in my favor. We used it with amazing power to negotiate a deal that would put a huge smile on most M&A attorneys' faces. Section title, summary: getting approached by a potential acquirer is both validating and flattering. If you've built a great company, it will happen on a somewhat regular basis, and you'll become a professional at doing the dance. And someday, you'll possibly decide it's time to sell the company. If so, I hope you are handsomely rewarded for your accomplishments. I hope you found this article both interesting, informative, and actionable. Good luck with your next acquisition approach, and best of luck building a great company. Check out all the other content I've published at shockwaveinnovations.com, including my free online courses.